JTS. Yeah. Just in time sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is just a town sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is just a time sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is just in time sports, come and get your weekly takes. Come and get it. He gon' tell it to you straight,
Welcome into the show. Welcome back. The Just in Time Sports Podcast is back. Our first show since October 8th. It's been over 4 months. Sorry about that, guys. Sincerest apologies. We're going to get back to our regularly scheduled shows. We're going to come back to you every week. However, a lot of things happen. Great football season. Ended up coming in second in the state. Holiday season, and just a lot of stuff happened. And then when football season was winding down, my football season was winding down. There was so much to go on. I missed a lot, which I would have, you know, been able to talk about with you guys at the time, as far as the NFL season and kind of breaking down what happened towards the end and kind of my excitement for that. The transfer portal was insane, being an LSU guy. I mean, the last time we talked, I think Brian Kelly was still the head coach of LSU. Obviously, that is no longer the case. The NBA hadn't even started yet. Women's college basketball was not even a thought process. The WNBA actually had hoped to start their season on time. A lot of things occurred in the 4 months we've been away. But I am back. I am excited to be back. This is, of course, your owner and host, Justin Jackson, coming to you from the JTS studio. This is Just in Time Sports Season 7, Episode 1. Excited to be back with you guys. Coming to you locally from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I don't think I've ever mentioned that. I think I've mentioned like the state or whatever, but coming to you locally from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the heart, of course, of LSU football. Of course, South Louisiana. Of course, I keep my eye on the Saints, but you guys know I'm a Patriots fan. For those of you who are new, some of you could be new to the show. Kind of want to get all my biases out there in Front Street. I'm a huge Patriots fan. I'm a huge LSU fan. Those two topics would never be biased on the show, or never be unbiased on the show. I don't care if I say in future episodes, hey guys, it's going to be an unbiased moment for me regarding LSU football or regarding the Patriots. It will never be unbiased regarding those two topics. Now, LSU basketball, LSU baseball, LSU women's basketball, if track and field comes up on the show, obviously those would be a little more unbiased. Not a whole lot of unbiased, but they would be a lot more unbiased than LSU football. LSU football would never be unbiased on this show, ever in life. Let's just get that out of the way. Now, the New England Patriots topics. I think I'm a fairly unbiased fan. However, I always think it depends on the team expectations. For instance, I wasn't on for 4 months, but I feel like I would have been very unbiased regarding the Patriots this season because I didn't have a ton of expectations for us. So I thought I said going into the season, you guys remember, I said going into the season, let's fight for a playoff spot. Bills are going to win our division. Okay, that's fine. You know, that's probably one, maybe two more years of that, them doing that, where they'll be, to me, clearly the best team in the division. One or two more years, kind of their Super Bowl window. So they're going to be clearly the best team in the division. That's fine. We're not fighting for that right now anyway. We're in year one of a head coach, year two of a quarterback. Like, we're fine. This is the first year, to me, of the rebuild. The Gerard Mayo year didn't count. kind of how I felt about the Urban Meyer year in Jacksonville. Kind of how I felt about another one-year dud somewhere. I was like, that didn't even count toward their rebuild. Like, it didn't count. To me, Raheem Morris with Atlanta last year was like a lame duck coach. That almost didn't count. So, but Jerod Mayo and Urban Meyer's years were like, oh, Pete Carroll in Vegas. That didn't count. Like, it was a stopgap year. The intent was there. The intent was fine. It's just the intent didn't come through. It felt like a stopgap year, right? So, to me, in New England, this is year one of the true post-Belichickian era. Jerod Mayo was almost, didn't count, kind of got scapegoated, kind of got sent out, you know, to kind of take the brunt of the blame. I truly think, along with how he acted as the head coach, a lot of reports came out. We don't have to re-talk about that and re-discuss that. I truly think what happened to him was that last game of the season, as far as winning that Buffalo game, losing the number one pick. And then, now, granted, we ended up with Drake May. So, it all worked out in the wash, but having the control of the number one pick, or did we have Drake May already? No, we had Drake May already. We lost Joe the number one pick. We were going to trade it because they sat May and played Milton. We were gonna trade it and have control of the draft and didn't end up falling back. Again, it worked out in the wash anyway, but having the control of a pick would have been a lot better situation. Regardless, I look at it kind of as, again, I looked at this year as our first year of our real post-Belichickian era. I say anything over 9 wins in the playoff spot, I'm good with. Then I kind of said, okay, the only playoff game I expect to win is the Chargers game because I knew what we did well on defense was send pressure. I knew what they didn't have was offensive line. So when we beat them, I said, okay, anything after that is land, yeah. I knew about Houston's defense. Then I knew about Denver's defense. Even though with Jared Stidham, I said, they have an amazing defense. And then I knew what Seattle brought, right? And so Super Bowl loss, I'm perfectly fine with. I was good with. So it's probably the most unbiased of seasons you would ever see from me as a Patriots fan. And none of you heard it because I wasn't on for 4 months. But I am back. Enough of what you missed. Enough of what I could have talked about. Which I had an NFL topic in here, and I'll discuss kind of the NFL season as a whole really quickly at a certain point in the show. I kind of touched on it a lot there, kind of talk about how I felt regarding several people. However, let's actually get into what we are not talking about. The JTS Quick Touch is our new segment. So anytime we have a new kind of a overview of topics kind of going around the sports world, I think you guys may want to hear about, I will do the JTS Quick Touch. What that means is we'll just quickly touch on any of the variety of topics that are out there. The number one, of course, being the Winter Olympics. We're not going to talk about the Winter Olympics. You guys also don't care about the Winter Olympics. The most interesting story about the Winter Olympics so far has been the condom shortage. You guys generally don't care about the Winter Olympics. I like certain events. For instance, I fall in love with curling for 2 weeks every 4 years. I don't understand it. I don't get the scoring aspect. I don't understand what a foul is. Apparently, that was a cheating scandal. Apparently, they did the same cheating scandal previously. I don't understand it, but it's a very fun thing to watch. They feel like there's always some new death-defying ski event. That's always interesting. I used to be a huge Winter Olympics fan, a Winter X Games fan. So the X Games events that are in the Olympics, I'll watch. So Super Pipe, Big Air, any of the racings, of course, ski and snowboard, I'm pretty much in. If you have a ski on you, if you have a skis on your feet or a snowboard on your feet, I'm pretty much in. I'm out on the skating. I'm out on the figure skating. I'll watch the hockey a little bit. Most of the events I'm out, right? Because there's a lot more of what the Summer Olympics has for gymnastics, they have for skiing, for skating. I'm just not interested, right? I don't get the bobsledding. I don't get what makes you fast. Like, it's a very simple concept to me. Whoever gets down the hill fastest, very simple concept to me. I don't understand the techniques. I don't understand what makes you fast. I just don't get it, right? I don't know running Olympics. I'll also quickly touch on men's college basketball. We're not going to get into it today. However, that will be a topic that will come up. March Madness is around the corner. The conference tournaments are 4 to 6 games away, depending on your schedule. So the men's college basketball games. There are a lot of talented players in it. A lot of talented players in it. We've got AJ DeBanster, we've got Darren Peterson, Caleb Love at North Carolina. I messed up by naming players, so I'm gonna forget people. But there are a lot of, it feels like every day somebody else is going for 40. I mean, there's a lot of talented players in it. I think NIL is helping. And we'll actually talk about NIL regarding college football later in the show, so I don't want to dive too far into it because I'm sure I'm going to tie it all together. But there's a lot of talented college basketball players in there. And college baseball is starting as well. So if you're a big college baseball fan, as obviously as an LSU graduate, there isn't an atmosphere that beats the box, maybe besides Omaha. But Alex Box Stadium and Tiger Stadium is already up and running. Jay Johnson on his title defense. Again, I probably won't be very biased to them either, or very unbiased to them either. But it is what it is. College baseball is back. But let's get into the actual show. You guys have been here 11 minutes, and so far what you've heard is an amazing intro song by B-Roy, a good friend of mine, a rapper out of the Northeast. Check out his stuff on Apple Music. Feel like he's always dropping some heat every few weeks, it feels like. But amazing rapper out of the Northeast, Philly area. B-Roy is his name, and we'll link his album in the episode description, or his project on Apple Music episode description. And you've heard what I'm not talking about and kind of an update on life, but you are here for my commentary on a variety of options, on a variety of topics. The main topic happening, of course, right now is the NBA. So let's get right into the NBA. And the big thing was the All-Star Game. So there's been a lot of different commentaries on it. The All-Star Game has been, I kind of feel like I've seen the peak of the All-Star, and I kind of feel like I've seen the death of the All-Star Game all at one time. To me, I feel like I've seen the peak of All-Star Weekend, and I've seen the death of All-Star Weekend. So let's talk about the peak. To me, the peak was 2016 to 2020, give or take. 2016, of course, to me is the greatest slam dunk contest of all time. That is LaVine Gordon 1. That is where LaVine does windmill from the free throw line, the lob from the free throw line, and the between the legs from the free throw line. He also does the between the legs backwards. That is Aaron Gordon's sit-down dunk, the 360 catching windmill off on the mascot, the double pump. LaVine Gordon won. To me, is the greatest dunk contest of all time. Easily the best. There's mystique behind, like, Jordan Dominique, where Dominique does the from vert double overhand windmill. Jordan free throw line dunks it for the first time. And creates the Jordan logo. Like, you know, there's mystique contest, but as far as quality of dunks, there's nobody beating LaVine Gordon 1. And then I've seen amazing three-point contest. Three-point contest to me just is shot go in. Like, it was the Klay, Dame, and Steph three-point contest was insane. To me, that always is to do the shots go in. If the shots don't go in, it doesn't matter. But then the All-Star, I remember the celebrity All-Star game used to be, like, fun. Like, Bieber, Terrell Owens, Kevin Hart, Monet Davis. You get, like, active senators and congressmen, like, actively playing in the game. Like, it was a fun game. Obama almost played that one year. And somebody was like, who's going to guard the president? Because you follow the president, is that a threat to national security? Like, you know, the All-Star game used to be a fun thing. Or the celebrity All-Star game, rather, used to be this fun event that kind of you looked forward to on Thursday night or whatever they did it, because it was like enough celebrities. You knew the celebrities. You knew the people. The WNBA would be the only pro players on the floor, but they were like jogging because they weren't even in season, you know. They're not even in season. They're an All-Star. They're, you know, a month or so before they even go to training camp. So they're on the floor. They're jogging. They're laughing. They put a couple moving people and go to the rim, kind of laughing and joking. And then the All-Star game itself, I remember the All-Star game in Jerry World, you know, where they had the All-Star game. And, you know, and then, of course, to me, the peak of the All-Star game was the Kobe Memorial All-Star game. Right after Kobe Bryant had died, the numbers, East one team wore 24 for Kobe, the other one wore 2 for Gigi. And it was the first year of the Elam ending, or the target score. they can't use Elam Ending because that's from the basketball attorney that did have that trademarked. But Target Score, that was the first year of the Target Score too. It was whatever the highest team plus 24. And that game was amazing. It ended anticlimactically because it ended with Anthony Davis getting fouled and shooting free throws. And that's how he got the Target Score. So it wasn't a buzzer beater. I think LeBron had the first like real shot to end it. But you know, there's iconic photos from that game. LeBron walking down, you know, and Giannis is in front of him, checking him up, and you see Spike Lee and the Migos and everybody standing up in the background, like basically leaned over the court, like some big time AAU or high school local basketball game. I mean, everybody's on their feet, leaned over the court because Giannis got a chance to win it. LeBron's got a chance to win it. Giannis is guarding them, and it was just the spirit of competitiveness was at an all-time high because they were playing, basically playing for Kobe. You know, and they always, you kind of go back and reference that Kobe's the reason why these events were as competitive as they were. Kobe brought USA Basketball back because the first person Jerry Colangelo and the Colangelos went to fix it was Kobe Bryant. Which, of course, led to a lot of players like LeBron, D-Wade, so on and so forth. Don't have to re-talk about that either. But what I mean is that All-Star Game had the spirit of Kobe all through it because they were basically playing for Kobe. They were playing in honor of Kobe. And then the next year, I believe it was a LeBron fadeaway game winner. And then it trailed back off. It's almost like that spirit of Kobe won. Everybody was going hard. I mean, people were sweating, fouling at the end, like the Kyle Irving took a charge. Like, people playing basketball. And then the next one still had that remnants of the Target Score. And then it faded back off. And then last couple years, I mean, literally, they've been walking into, like, consecutive possessions of just walking down the court, stopping at half court, shooting a three. Walking down the court, stopping at half court, shoot a three. Walking down the court, stopping at half court, shoot a three. Somebody get a steal. They wouldn't even do the big charger for the big boom dunk. They were like laying the ball up casually. You know what I'm saying? Like, it had lost all the flair. It lost all the juice. To the point people were talking about, man, let's not even stop doing it. They haven't even done any full All-Star game in about 3 years. They've done these mini games. But the problem with the mini games is, like, LeBron played 2 minutes and checked out. Like, then when they did another COVID one, LeBron didn't really play because it was supposed to be in somewhere and they moved to Atlanta and LeBron barely played. And it was, you know, like, you get these moments during All-Star. The past 3 years has been a joke. Anyway, they introduced USA versus World. The reason why this is, I think, a good timed idea, I think it's timing, was impactful. I don't know if it works next year. Well, it might, but I'll start off with the timing was respectful because we just had the Olympics. The Summer Olympics were, I mean, we just had the Paris Olympics in 2024. So the Olympics kind of remnant was kind of still on it. Because this is the first All-Star, really, that you implemented USA versus the World aspect. Well, what's coming down the pike is 2028. So you're 2024, you just had LeBron, Steph, and KD on the court for Team USA, beating France in France for the gold. You kind of come with that 2028 Olympics is coming. It's in LA now. It's in the USA. It's in that building. The FIBA tournament will be held in the Intuit Dome. So you kind of, again, the remnant is kind of still on you from 2024. The build up 2028 still kind of hanging in there. So because of which, that USA versus World is kind of okay. Because for instance, if you're an international player, the Americans are in trouble. 2028 will not have LeBron James. 2028 will not have Stephen Curry. 2028 will not have Kevin Durant. Well, the three main players on the USA team won't be there. So you think about, you take them three off, keep the nine that were there. At that point, you add maybe a Derrick Queen, a Jaden Duran, and AJ DeBanster. Might be a 2028 squad. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to be a very young team as far as 2028. And that's not even saying, like, a Tyrese Haliburton doesn't again. But Haliburton will actually be an important player this year. He wasn't that first 2024, but he'll be the important player this year. Like, Tatum didn't really play much. You're going to need him in 2028. So there's a lot of stuff happening with Team USA. But anyway, that kind of aspect. And then who have been winning, who's been dominating the awards, international players. I told you to list the top five players in the NBA. At least four of them are foreign. The MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, is from Canada. Giannis is Nigerian by way of Greece. Jokic is Serbian. Luka is Slovenian. So four of the top five players, at minimum, are foreign-born players. And the best player on the in the Young Bucks, to me, is Wemby. He's French. The best Young Buck American is Ant. But I'm saying, like, so as far as that trajectory in 2 years, the best, it might be the best five players in the world could be foreign. Depending on, you know, Giannis' health and so on and so forth. But the best five players in the world could be foreign with Ant fighting to be in the top five. So Team USA versus the world gets announced. You know, each team has a pool. USA will be divided into squads, stars and stripes, and the world will have their team, and then the round robin style, whatever. I think two things matter. Wembanyama's effort. He came out and blocked somebody's shot early. Like, let him know, like, because when he's been talking, like, I'm going to bring the competitiveness back, or I'm going to embarrass you. So that's your option. Either I'm going to dunk everywhere and block everybody's shot and whatever, or you're going to play basketball. And I still might do it, but you're going to try. And he came out early. It was block, dunk, three. And the other team kind of went, oh, he was serious. And Ant even said it out the game. Like, no, it was him. It was Victor. Like, Wemby made me play. Because when Wemby was coming so hard, I had no choice. Either I'm going to get embarrassed or I'm going to play. Ultimately, Wemby's team didn't win because two of his teammates didn't play. They went into the game down four starters. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander didn't play. Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic did the old baseball wave your cap moment and say, oh, I'm in the game. They waved to the crowd briefly. They played 5 minutes in the first game, didn't play in the second one. And even when they played, they were barely moving. And Giannis didn't play. So if we look at it, when I say those five best players in the world and four of them are foreign, all four of those four best players didn't play on the world team. And they lost by a total of 5 points in two games, and one of them in overtime. Like, so it would have been very interesting, the level of competitiveness, if the world team was fully healthy. If they rolled that starting lineup out of Shai, Luka, Jokic, Wemby, and Giannis. Because there was no size on the Stripes or Stars team, LeBron and them team. And Stripes only had one center in Jalen Durant. So it would have been very interesting to see how they would have made that work regarding the world team trying to defend them. But to me, honestly, the All-Star game was competitive. The mini games helped. It was only a quarter. Now, the vets, old men, burned out because they played three games in a row. They played game two against the Young Bucks, then played the basic elimination game against the world team, and then played the Young Bucks again. They basically played three quarters in a row, and I mean, the Young Bucks played three, but they played one and two set, and then played the third one. So the OGs, I think, just got, you know, tired and legs were dead. But you got three competitive games. We had an overtime game, a buzzer beater, and effectively another buzzer beater in the first three games, and then the young dudes had to warm up, and the old guy had to re-warm up, and the young dudes figured it out first, and when they went up 15-1 or something like that, whatever, it was over. But at that point, they were laughing and running and having fun, going full speed, and the old guys were like, look, we ain't got it in us no more. Like, the point was proven, we still better than the world team, and like, that was almost it. It was, and I listened to a podcast, and I think it was Vince Goodwill, suggested, like, what if the world USA teams has, like, a non-European group chat? And they were like, no, we got to make sure they don't win. Like, or some of the, you know what I'm saying? Like, suggested, like, no. Like, whatever happened between us, we figured out. They can't win. And that's what made them play harder. But I think we kind of fixed All-Star. I think 2027's All-Star would be very interesting if we keep the same USA versus world. Now, a lot of the players spoke about they rather East-West. I know LeBron said he wanted East-West. His last All-Star is probably next year. So I know LeBron said he wanted East-West. Kawhi said whatever the fans want. He's down. Very diplomatic answer from Kawhi. He kind of said whatever the fans want, whatever get them interested, whatever would have them watch it. He's down. You know, it's kind of with the general sentiment. Her East-West or whatever the fans want. Nobody really had a suggestion outside of East-West or whatever the fans wanted. Me personally, I like East-West with something on the line. I think East-West allows you to put something on the line. For instance, the All-Star game is usually made up of a bunch of players on a bunch of teams fighting for titles, right? Nobody on the court played for a losing team. Norman Powell, maybe. But, like, because the Heat are already titles. But, like, nobody else on the court. Really, I mean, the Pistons had their guy on the court. He's first in the West. You know what I'm saying? Like, Spurs had a guy on the court. So on and so forth. Like, these guys were top six in their conferences. Something that matters with playoff seeding. And I've always said, if you want a game, either put a bunch of money, like $8 to $10 million a player for the winning team and nothing for the losers, or home court advantage in the finals. Remember, they said the MLB All-Star game used to be a game. A, all baseball, you're pretty safe besides freak injuries. And B, it was home court in the world. It was home field in the World Series. So they used to go at it, especially the game, like, you know, kind of early. Like, if they had a legend, they'd feed them, went down the middle, and let them pop it over the fence, something like that. But if it's 5-4 or 3-2 or 8-8 in the seventh inning, it became baseball because they were trying to get home field advantage in the World Series. Put home court advantage in the finals up. And with that game one and that game seven is in the other team's building now. That matters. You know what I'm saying? So I think if you're going to go East-West, you have to re-incentivize what is going to get them to play. Either boatload of money. The NBA's got sponsorships everywhere. Have somebody every year. You are the official whatever, all-star, blah, 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 sponsorship. Make it one of the banks. They give $100 million, and it's still innate, and the winning team player pool splits it. The coach get $2 million off top. Every assistant coach gets, you know, $1 million off top, and then the players divide the rest. Make it interesting. See what happens then. Put a whole bunch of money on the line and see what happens then. Or, like I said, make it where it's a home court advantage type situation regarding the NBA All-Star. And then quickly, we'll jump through kind of some first half things that are happening in the NBA so far. So we have our title contenders. To me, this is an interesting year because there's no outright number one. And you might say, Justin, there's the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I will push back at you and say, is there? Is Oklahoma City Thunder the runaway number one team in the NBA this year? I would say no. The San Antonio Spurs have a plan for them, and they have been dominating them. They beat them 3 out of 4 times. Now, am I saying I'm going to pick anybody from Oklahoma City to win the title? The answer is no. At this current juncture, I would pick Oklahoma City still. What I'm saying is it's not those years where we rolled out of bed. I think this is a very Adam Silver-like thing, unlike David Stern. We rolled out of bed and said, okay, it's October 31st. The Cavs and Warriors are going to meet in the finals. It's 2016. The Cavs and Warriors are going to meet in the finals. Let's just find out who they're playing to get there. Which is the general sentiment. A lot of times when I grew up, you knew one team. Some years you knew both teams that were going to be in the finals. Injuries would be the only thing that would derail it kind of thing. This year, I have no idea. There's so many different ways you can go. And just people don't understand. I think Kevin Durant was on Twitter, a while back. And I won't go into Kevin Durant's Twitter activity on this show. But Kevin Durant was on Twitter recently on his actual account. And he was discussing, somebody was talking about title contenders. And, you know, one of the famous things is always happening in Kevin Durant's career is what happens if his toes are on the line. Now, people have romanticized it, and even I did a little bit, that shot would have put them in the finals. That shot was a second-round series shot to go to game six, to go to the next game, to then try to go to the conference finals, to then try to go to the finals. In my head, that shot has been romanticized, in a lot of people's heads, romanticized to if his toe is an inch behind the line, that shot puts them in the NBA finals. Kevin Durant basically said, dude, we were cooked. Kyrie was out with a hamstring or something. And, or with a foot, with something lower body. And then Harden was out with the hamstring. So he was like, the odds of us winning game seven and then turning around and win the conference finals was almost impossible. I mean, people have romanticized the shot as if they were going to win the title after that because they lost to Milwaukee, who Milwaukee turned around and beat Phoenix. If Giannis doesn't go for 50 in game seven, Phoenix beats Milwaukee. You know what I'm saying? And Chris Paul retires with a ring. Shout out Chris Paul, first ballot Hall of Famer. Retired recently, but New Orleans Hornets legend. I mean, I couldn't call him a Pelican legend, but Hornets legend. You know, they were going to, you know, Giannis, it took Giannis to have one of the greatest game sevens, might be the greatest game seven in an NBA Finals individual performance ever to beat Phoenix in that game seven, including guarding both halves of a lob late. I mean, like, so what I mean by that is, you know, KD talks about, and my point of this is KD talked about how hard it is to win series. How hard it is to win the first round. Okay, well, it's exponentially harder to win the second round. Well, it's even harder to win the third round. And it's nearly impossible to win a finals game, nonetheless, a finals series. He's been on both ends of it. He got beaten five as a young man by the Big Three Heat for LeBron's first title. He's beaten LeBron in four. You know, he swept LeBron out as a member of the Warriors. He's been on both sides of the coin. He's talking about how hard it was to even win a game in the NBA Finals. And that's what makes this year so interesting in the NBA. Because who's won a title in Detroit? Who's even gone far in the playoffs as a key contributor in Detroit? Nobody. Okay, let's take a look at Cleveland. Harden has been there. He's been in the finals as a young man on that Thunder team. He's a hamstring away potentially from being back in the finals with Houston. Not even his hamstring, Chris Paul's hamstring away from being in the finals in Houston. And even then, if they don't miss 27 straight threes, they might still get in the finals. Who knows, they win because again, Harden's hamstring is gone. They probably lose to LeBron and so on and so forth. But I mean, Chris Paul's hamstring was gone and they probably lose to LeBron. It doesn't matter. Donovan Mitchell, I think he's been to the conference finals maybe once, and that's it. Look at a Boston. They're very, very experienced. They just won, right, 2 years ago. A lot of that core, that one, is still there. You don't have Porzingis, obviously, but a lot of that core is still there. But they don't have Jason Tatum yet. But they'll be in, if Tatum comes back, that's probably – if Tatum comes back, that's probably my pick. That becomes my pick. If Tatum comes back, he's 85% of what he was, that's my pick. And then I look at San Antonio. I love Area 51. However, I just don't see it. And the only way that I don't see it is who's on that team. Again, as a key contributor, has had a long run. Is Harrison Barnes still there? Harrison Barnes is not still there. Then the answer is nobody. Especially your two main players being Castle Fox, three main players being Castle Fox and Wimby. None of them have made that long run. Wimby has done it internationally with France. He's not done it in the NBA. Fox has never done it. And neither has Stephon Castle, obviously. So, the only team with a boatload of experience, which is why I put a lot of people picked, going to be them in the playoff start, that are in that kind of that mix, is the Cavs. Not the Cavs, OKC. They just did it. We just saw it. We got the hypothesized, can they? We just saw it. And it is the rare year where there's not two, three, or four groups that have done the conference final run. Like the Lakers, if they got their act together, could. You've got Luka, who's been to a finals, lost to Boston, that Boston championship, actually. Luka's been to a finals. LeBron, of course, has been to the 10. You know, those two guys alone, if you can get them there, would be a menacing sight to see on the other side. However, no one else on the team has done it. Aiden was in the finals, the Giannis finals. Aiden's been there. Aiden was there in the Giannis finals. He was half of the play that Giannis blocked. But Austin Reeves has not been. Jake LaRavia has not been. Luke Kennard, not as a key player, at least, has not been. JJ Redick as a coach has not been. He's been there as a player on the Atlanta Magic and lost to Kobe, but he hasn't been there as a coach, obviously. So as far as experience in groups and just that discussion of it's really hard to win playoff games, it's really hard to win playoff series, and it's almost impossible to win titles, Oklahoma City would have to be the primary contender just because of the experience factor. They've done it. They've got one of the best five players on the planet. And the whole group they have just did it last season. So that'd probably be the early pick. Early MVP, I don't know, it's all over the place. I talk on this quickly, kind of all over the place because of the 65-game rule. I don't know. Jokic probably going to be ineligible. Shea's going to be getting close to the limit. It might be Jaylen Brown or something. Like, you know what I'm saying? It might end up being Jaylen Brown or Cade Cunningham or Wembanyama might get one earlier than he's supposed to because just the 65-game rule knocking out so many of the top guys from being able to get it. But that is all I have regarding the NBA. Now we're going to jump into college football. Welcome back into the show. I hope you got your fill of basketball there. I hope you got your fill of basketball as we exited the first half of the season. That pre-All-Star and coming down the stretch into post-All-Star. But I'm going to get into college football. So college football, a lot of times, obviously, congratulations to Indiana. First, I want to say that. Indiana wasn't on when Indiana won. Congrats to Indiana. Congrats to Curry Cignetti pulling off the greatest turnaround in arguably sports history, but definitely college football history. I mean, Indiana was the losingest program in the country. Indiana was routinely a laughing stock of the college football world. And now they're kings of college football. And it looked like Cignetti ain't slowing down. And because of which, congratulations, huge congratulations to Indiana for that. However, coming out of that season, we got a lot of discussion about the calendar. So the college football national championship game for the next couple years, date has been released. It's like January 26th, 27th. It's ridiculous. We've somehow added even more time to this dumb calendar. And if I get impassioned about this ahead of time, this shouldn't be a 30-minute segment. But if I get impassioned about this ahead of time, I'm sorry. I'm a little more aggressive than what you guys used to hearing me talk. This calendar is stupid. All right, let's figure this out. Let's figure that out. Let's everyone put on our adult pants here. Let's everybody figure this out together. Okay, I feel like we're adults. I feel like we have the ability as adults to put this thing together as a collective. I feel like we have the ability to do this. Because right now, this is stupid. You want to know how I know it's stupid? You want to know how I know it's dumb? I know it's dumb because no one in any suggestions about the calendar said, hey, let's keep the calendar the exact same way it is now. No one said that, which means it's stupid. Even bad ideas at a certain point get support. Awful ideas at a certain point get support. Plain and simple. Even really, really bad ones get support. Primarily, what Cothwell will tell you is the reason why the calendar gets so long at the end of the year is because they're basically ducking the NFL. That they do all this maneuvering, hee-hawing, and so on and so forth in order to try and dodge the NFL. And they will tell you that openly. They'll tell you, like, yeah, I mean, pretty much the NFL steals our Saturdays. And so we aren't able to really and truly take control of our calendar because we lose the ability to have Saturdays in December because the NFL jumps on and they start taking NFL Saturdays for playoff games, so on and so forth. Okay, fine. Here's what you do. You either work with the NFL, or you shorten this thing down. Talk to me about it. The NFL plays 17 games and they have one bye week. College football plays 12 games and there's like three. You don't play week zero or week one. There's another bye week somewhere in the non-conference, and then every conference gives you a bye week. So typically you have three bye weeks, and the Army and Navy are going to back in. So there's 15 weeks. Week zero is a week. So 16 weeks to play 12 games. You have four byes. Army and Navy week, unless you're Army and Navy. But if you're Army and Navy, you get an extra week in there. Week zero or week one, your non-conference bye and your conference bye. You end up with four bye weeks. You end up with a month of not playing football, regardless. Okay, so here's my calendar fix. Okay, so let's mark it down. Let's talk to my producers. Let's get this segmented out. I'm gonna fix this thing, and I'm gonna fix it in the next probably 3 minutes or so. So we're gonna mark it down at 40 minutes and 50 seconds of when I fix the calendar. I fix college football in general in the next 5 minutes. Pay attention. Calendar stupid. First of all, you start week zero. You mythically made a week. Week zero. You tied a tight end to week one. Week one this year, unofficial starts August 29th. Okay, no week zero, sign everybody up. So everybody, that bye week no longer matters. We're going to fix it from the end of the season to the start of the next season. So pay attention. Week one starts August 29th. So that weekend, everybody plays the game. Week one. I'm taking away the non-conference bye week. So that's 2 weeks we've now made up. Army, Navy, you no longer have your own week. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news. You no longer have your own week. So that's 3 weeks we've now made up. So now, instead of the playoff game, Southern National Championship game being January 27th, we've slid it 3 weeks up to January 6th. We are already much better. I have done nothing but take away week zero, slide week one up, tie the whole calendar up, take away Army, Navy, and take away the non-conference bye. That's all I've done. You still have your conference bye week, okay? There is also a week gap between the playoff starting and the conference championship game, which is the reason why, and we've seen historically, the bye week teams that sit the bye week, the automatic bye pretty much, then the first round, they sit like 21 to 30 days between games. They lose. That week is gone. So in my calendar, it goes week 14, Army Navy, the Army Navy week no longer exists. They get a prime time slot on either Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they can pick. When nothing else is on, Army Navy. They play that game, week 14, where week 15 used to be, is conference championship week. The next week is the first round of the playoffs. The very next week. And you work out a deal with the NFL. The beautiful part about college football is you can play that sport on a Thursday night, and it's going to be packed on college campuses. You can't tell me it isn't, because I've seen it all season. Thursday, Friday, they will play conference championship game. They will play the first round. So if you're worried about the NFL destroying you on Wild Card Weekend, but I don't think at that point Wild Card Weekend wouldn't even exist yet. I think actually you'd still be in an exclusive window. Let's double check. I'm pretty sure you'd be though. Bowl week starts December 12th-ish. Somewhere in there. I'm almost positive you would still be exclusive righted by the NFL. But let's say you are not. And I'm looking this up now as we speak, so excuse me if I don't have it in front of me right this second. Wildcard round was January 7th to the 13th. Okay, perfect. So we're avoiding the NFL entirely. Great. And I thought I was, but I was making sure. So wildcard weekend was January 7th to January 13th. That was wildcard week. Remember, I've already slid the national championship to the 6th. So with no other adjustments, we're not running to the NFL, which means we still have our Saturdays to us. Perfect. First round play Friday night into Saturday. Kind of do it now. They play that first game on Friday, and then they kind of run them straight through on Saturday. Perfect. The NFL's not there yet. Run them through on Saturday. That next week, there's only four games now. Same concept. One Friday, and then you can run them through on Saturday. The next week, you only have two games. 4:30, 7 on Saturday. You have that time off for Christmas, and then you play January 1st in the Rose Bowl every single year. College football calendar is fixed. I have just fixed it. And it took 5 minutes. And it took no other complications. Get rid of week zero. Slide everything up a week. Because you need 4 weeks. Get rid of week zero. Slide everything up a week. There's your first week. Get rid of Army-Navy week. There's your second week. Get rid of the bye week in the non-conference schedule. Every major conference has one. Get rid of it. There's your third week. So now your regular season has gone from 16 weeks to 13 weeks. And then get rid of the week between the conference championship games and start of the first round. There's your month. And you play it January 1st. Whenever January 1st falls, you play it January 1st in the Rose Bowl. College football is fixed. And you are done. Because guess what? The transfer portal window will not open until January 2nd. I don't care. It is a two-week window from January 2nd to January 16th. So now, you're done. Oregon's coordinators are not working two jobs trying to recruit. Ole Miss coordinators, Ole Miss office staff is not coaching in the Sugar Bowl. And instead of going to the bus, instead of going on the plane to Oxford to the right, to the east, they're getting in black SUVs and going to LSU football ops to the west to go to Baton Rouge and start recruiting for LSU because their season would have been over before Christmas. They would have already been introduced to LSU staff. And when the portal opens January 2nd, they're all in LSU colors already. Lane Kiffin wouldn't have had to make a choice of finishing for Ole Miss or coming to LSU. The season would have been over already. It is done with the easiest of changes. It takes all of 5.5 to 6 minutes to fix the calendar. It does. You do nothing else. You're out of the NFL's way. The NFL has football exclusivity starting January 2nd, which is right in time when that wildcard weekend hits anyway. The only thing you run into is that week 18 and your championship game weekend will be right around the same weekend. Oh, well. 7 primetime. Jay went primetime New Year's Day in the Rose Bowl, College Football National Championship every year. Simple. It is really easy. And that way the Rose Bowl still is the Rose Bowl. Because remember, man, if you move the calendar around, you may lose the Rose Bowl's prestige or whatever. No, you don't. The Rose Bowl is the national champion every single season. And you rotate the others. Simple. It is easy peasy lemon squeezy. The national championships in the Rose Bowl every year, January 1st. Transfer portal opens up January 2nd. It goes January 16th. It closes. Most school enrollment dates about January 20th. So it closes. You go from then you shift. You have spring ball. Spring ball doesn't change. Spring ball doesn't change. The portal opens up again because college semester ends a little weird. The portal opens up again the day after all colleges are out of school. It opens up again for 1 week. So now you have no position battles. It opens up again for 1 week. You have a week to enter. In order for you to be eligible for the 2026, say, and it gets enacted this season. In order for you to be eligible, for the 2026 season, you must be enrolled in your school for the fall semester by July 1st. Meaning, you got about 2 months to find a home. And then you're not playing college football in the next season. You have to be enrolled in university by July 1st. Easy. And then you go right into the New Year calendar. And everybody is fixed. And nobody is complaining. And no one is crying. And no one is boo-hooing that their coordinators are working two jobs, or that the players are stressed, or the portal window's in the wrong spot, or none of it. All you did was compress the regular season, take out some unnecessary bye weeks, make two official portal windows, and end this bad boy on January 1st. It's simple. It fixes the portal. It fixes the calendar. Oh, and by the way, with the NIL stuff, people complain about the NIL. Easy way to fix that too, guys. Sign freshmen to multi-year contracts. The buyouts are here. So if we're going to play in the buyout era, where a guy signs a contract and then he can't transfer because you have to buy him out of his new school. Some schools are doing it, but like I know Francis DeMond Williams was coming to LSU. I can almost guarantee that. He was a Washington Husky coming to be the quarterback at LSU. He signed with Washington, and then a week later, like, oh, I'm going to the portal. And they were like, no, you're not. And they could have had they bought him out of his contract for like $4 million. Excuse me. And they paid him another $5 million to come to LSU. He wasn't worth $9 million. LSU ended up getting the same level for $5.5 million. Whatever. But if I want my freshman to stop getting in the portal after 1 year and chasing the bag, I'm going to sign my freshman to a 2-year or 3-year deal. Where at least the new school's got to buy me out. You know what I'm saying? At minimum, they got to pay the money back. If they want him to go to the portal, something. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not just going to just allow my – I develop a kid, develop two kids. Like, especially at a Southeastern. When you're Southeastern, for example, I went there, graduated there. They're an FCS school, pretty good one. If you don't want, you know, Jalen Dominique, I think it was his name, they end up going to Wisconsin to leave you. When he walks on campus, make sure he's on a 2-year or 3-year deal. So now at least Wisconsin's got to pay you a little bit for him, something. Like, you get compensation, you get, like, maybe you get cash considerations or something. Like, you know, the guy don't just walk out of your building after you develop into an all-conference receiver. So I think that's the way to fix the NIL stuff. Man, sign him to a deal. If they get bought, it's like any, at that point, it's any other business. It's any other professional business. It's no different than when in the NBA, player X gets traded to the Cavs and the Cavs buy, they agree to a buyout and then he signs with a new team. Perfect. You know, whatever. Like, people get bought out of contracts all the time. The issue is you've got to have a system in place to where the buyouts are how they move and they can't just enter freely into free agency whenever they want, which is kind of where it sits now. And so that's kind of how you fix college football. I fix the calendar, I fix the portal, and I fix NIL, and it took me 12 minutes. I'm not sure what the problem is by the big wigs outside of control. Your 12-team playoff is still there. My model even allows a 16-team playoff because it's the same amount of games. We're not doing 24. But, like, you can even do a 16-team playoff. First round's on campus, and you go into the bowl system. Between the sugar, the peach, the cotton, and the orange, those are your bowls, and then the Rose Bowl is your natty. Like, it's really simple. It's really simple. But I guess I'm the smartest guy in the room. And that tends to happen. You know, it tends to happen when it comes to these things. I guess because I have a vested interest in what works and not what necessarily makes a whole bunch of money, which, by the way, having your sport on every single week would make a whole bunch of money. That's just me. Especially knowing that, you know, like Lane Kiffin finishing this thing off at LSU at Ole Miss before even going to LSU would have been a story for the ages. You know, like, so I think, you know, in the interest of this sport, it would be a 2025 national, or this year, 2026 national champion gets crowned on January 1st, 2027. And so that person is the reigning champion all 2027, and the new champion gets crowned in 2028, and so on and so forth. You're out of the NFL's hair early. Like, you got exclusivity in some parts of the calendar. It's perfect. Will college football do this? Of course not. But it is perfect. But moving on to our last topic we're going to get into today. We're not going to do a sound break. Just a typical sound break. Just going to, you know, segment it out. Kind of already talked about the NFL and their offseason is really just getting started. So we'll bring them up next episode. But what I really wanted to get into today, just quickly, is women's college basketball and women's basketball in general. So obviously the WNBA is going through their CBA negotiations, which has led to some high intensity action with Unrivaled. Unrivaled being the 3-on-3 league with the smaller court, and it's a bunch of scoring, and it's really, really dope. It's all player owned. Like, Nafisa Collier and Brianna Stewart are the main two owners of it, along with their partners. And then, but Paige Beckers has a piece, and, like, I think Angela Reese has a small piece in it. Juju Watkins has a small piece. Flauzie Johnson has a small piece. Like, it's very player owned kind of thing, and they're going to start touring over the country soon, whatever, right? But the WNBA is in their contract negotiations and in their CBA negotiations. And what makes it contentious is the fact that the players have power. Anytime that the labor, I don't want to sound harsh, but the labor, being the players, have power, it makes the labor negotiations contentious. The reason being is they're the product on the court making all these decisions. So therefore, they are going to put into play what they have. I mean, salaries next year are going to go for $240,000 max, north of $1 million, We just seen how hard the players win the Unrivaled 1v1 tournament because $200,000 was the prize. Everybody competing there made less than that in the WNBA season. So, you know, the max salary is going to be north of $1 million. And they're going to get all these different cares. And they're going to get league pass free. And they're going to get all this different stuff that they didn't get before. But it's not enough in the sense of they just want a similar revenue structure to the NBA. Who knows if they get it? We're going to find out. It's going to be a very contentious labor negotiations because their calendar, speaking of calendars, is going to get very compressed because they started being free agency by now. Or right about to start free agency. Or deep into free agency. There's no labor. And 90% of the league is free agents. There's two teams coming in that needs expansion drafts. Like, this is going to be very interesting next couple of months to even get the WNBA started on time. Because they usually get started in late April, May-ish. They start playing games. And it's like, it's middle of February. And they haven't gotten there yet. So, we're going to see. But what I want to touch on is the women's game primarily. And I want to focus specifically on the SEC. We spoke about the SEC a lot in terms of football. And, man, I'm in SEC country. Like I said, I'm in Baton Rouge. I'm in SEC country. This is going to be the greatest conference tournament in women's basketball history. And the only reason why I say, I'm not saying in college basketball history, because some of those Big East tournaments were insane, like Kimba's run with the UConn. There's like 8 ranked teams in the SEC. There's South Carolina. There's Tennessee. There's LSU. I'm going to forget people. There's Ole Miss. There's Vandy. There's Texas. The Georgia's ranked. But there's going to be like 7 or 8 ranked schools in the conference tournament. It is going to be a bloodbath in the conference tournament. To even survive the SEC tournament, that's going to be harder than winning a tournament game, probably to the Elite Eight. Unless you run into another SEC school before that. It is going to be downright brutal. There are teams in the SEC with 4 losses, and the only losses are to other SEC schools. It is going to be insane, this conference tournament the SEC ladies are going to put on. I personally cannot wait. I mean, you have Kim Mulkey, who's trying to get over the Dawn Staley hump. You have Dawn trying to keep her iron grip on the conference. You have Coach Yo putting on a show now at Ole Miss. You got Texas, what they're doing over there. You've got Georgia. You've got Vandy, what they're doing over there. I mean, there is a lot of talent. I'm sure I'm missing somebody, and I apologize ahead of time if I did. But there's a lot of talent in the SEC. It is going to be a show in that conference tournament. From round 2 on, it is going to be an absolute show in the conference tournament. But that is all I have for you guys today. We'll get into some more, a lot more in the next few weeks. Happy to be back. JTS Season 7, Episode 1 is a wrap.